Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, thank you very much, Spike Reel, for that great introduction as usual. And welcome to the show, everybody. I'm really happy to have you here with us today. We have three very interesting guests today, and we're going to do our best to help them express some tips, ideas, and precautions for you, our listeners. And we're going to start with our first guest. He is Rhett Power, and Rhett is with a company called Wild Creations. And Wild Creations is one of the fastest growing businesses in South Carolina. They've won over 40 national awards for their innovative kids toys and have been in Inc. magazine in the 50 out of 5,000 company 2 years in a row. And Rhett believes that his Peace Corps experience taught him everything he needed to succeed in business. So we're going to talk about that and his book called 1 Million Frogs. And Rhett, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Bill, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today and to be able to speak with you.
Same here. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm interested in hearing about what you've done. It's an amazing accomplishment. And so tell us a little bit about your background. It sounds like you were in the Peace Corps and have some interesting stories there.
Oh, I could bore you with stories all day, but I've had a great career. I started out when I was in college with a canoe and kayak company, but then I went in the Peace Corps and was a teacher at a university and taught business and in economics and then worked in development. I was worked with USAID, which is the U.S. government's consulting arm and aid organization. And I was helping build small and medium-sized enterprises in the former Soviet Union and the Central Asian republics. And I did that for about 5 years, helping them transition from a command economy, like a Soviet-based economy, to a market economy. And then decided, you know what, I was really the happiest in my life when I was an entrepreneur in college. And so I convinced and talked a friend of mine into going into business with us, and that's when we founded Wild Creations back in 2007. And ever since then, we have been on a very accelerated growth curve, and have built a great kid consumer products company, and are just having a blast. You know, one of the things I really love about entrepreneurship is the fact that we get to call the shots, we get to be as creative and as reckless as we want to be, but at the same time, the weight's on our shoulders, and we get to make the calls, and I really do enjoy that aspect of entrepreneurship. You know, it's tough, as you know, and you know this as well as I do, that entrepreneurship is not for everybody, and it's very hard at times, but at the same time, it's very rewarding.
Well, it's like the old Frank Sinatra song. I did it my way, and apparently that, you know, that's appealing to so many people who say, you know, it may be difficult, it may be tough, but I'm going to try to innovate, and I'm going to compete in the marketplace, and that's why small business owners are our heroes. And Rhett, tell us about Wild Creations. What kind of Wild Creations do you come up with?
Well, some of my favorite things that we've made have our first product was, and still one of our best products ever, was a little balanced eco aquarium frogs, and that you hinted at talking about the book here in a few minutes. That's where the title comes from, 1 Million Frogs. It's actually an aquarium with lots of frogs, and a great product, sold millions of those around the country, and it's an ecosystem, so it's got a great educational component to it. My other two favorites that we've come up with, one was a remote control snake, and the other is a remote control bird that flies just like a real bird. It's absolutely amazing. So you can see a theme here, I'm sure, emerging sort of science and nature and things, and that's what Wild Creations is about. We and always have been about is giving kids a little bit of science and a little bit of nature, which you don't find in toys very much these days. And you know, we feel like we've done everything from digging dinosaur digging kits to CSI kits, and we just feel like that's an area where is really lacking in the children's play market.
Well, of course, in the educational in the schools, they don't learn as much as they should anymore about the peripheral parts of, you know, the important parts of life. I mean, things like music and art and learning about what's going on, you know, how the world works. So you're making an important contribution by giving by creating toys that make kids think, right, and wonder and spark their imagination a little bit more than a video game or something along those lines. That's great.
Well, we always, you know, I've got two young boys, and trying to get them off of their iPads and outside is a challenge. So we're trying. We're trying hard.
Well, and it sounds like you had some great experiences in the Peace Corps. Of course, that's a hands-on experience. So was that a driving force in you thinking about when I start a company, it's going to make a difference?
I think that's absolutely part of it. You know, the one thing I think, the most important thing I learned from Peace Corps was perseverance. And that I don't think that I learned that from Peace Corps, but I understood more about myself, what I could handle and what my, you know, my limits were and what, you know, Peace Corps, in a lot of ways, you're on your own. And you have this agency that's behind you. But more importantly, you're really out in a community very isolated from friends and family and communication and information. And so a lot of the stuff that you do in Peace Corps, you create yourself and you create opportunities and you create the job and you create your work. And, you know, you really do learn to rely on yourself and to count on yourself and to you've got to be extremely self-motivated to have a successful time. And I learned really that I could do anything. You know, it really reinforced in me that I could take on any challenge.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. And it forced you to think ahead and think towards, you know, really how are we going to get out of this mess, probably a lot of times more than you can count. Let me ask you a question now. At what point, because a lot of our listeners are, of course, business owners, and you've been one of the fastest growing companies in the country at one point. How did that feel when that was happening? What did it feel like, and how did you know that you turned a corner towards that?
It was an absolute roller coaster, and one that, you know, we always had it in our business plan. It's what we wanted. It was our goal. And, you know, we never wanted to be a local, you know, mom and pop. We always wanted to be a national company, an international company. But at the same time, you know, when you go from a couple of clients to a couple of thousand in a very short time, and you go from three employees to 50 in a couple of months, you know, there's a tremendous roller coaster that you go through. And we plan for it as much as you can, but you never, you know, you can never cover it all, and you can never be completely, prepared for it. And so what we had to do is one of the other things I learned in Peace Corps was absolute, you got to be flexible. And the great thing about my business partner and I is that we are extremely flexible, and we roll with the punches. And we had a lot of punches, as any entrepreneur does. And you just got to learn and have faith in yourself to be able to handle it and to handle that call on the weekend when something goes wrong, or you know, the call in the middle of the night, you know, when a shipment didn't get there or whatever. And I think that's that's how we handled it. We just were flexible. We had a plan. Things don't always go as planned, and you have to be flexible and be able to adapt. But we knew it was coming. You know, we saw it coming from the orders that were coming in and from the vendors that were approaching us about the products. You know, the minute you start talking to Toys R Us and the minute you start talking to Brookstone and stuff, that your life is getting ready to change, you know.
Right. Now, did you guys, when you're doing your planning and thinking through that this might happen, because you said, you know, we planned that this might happen, or we wanted this to happen, that's your goal, it's what you asked for, did you always have a good plan B in place when you had your plan A, just in case things went wrong or things went different, or was it just kind of on the fly, you just were ready to be flexible?
We were ready to be flexible. We also knew that it was our moment, that the, you know, our product peaked at that right time, and it hit at the right time, and we knew that we may not get another chance. So although we were not prepared, one example is we knew that we were really we didn't have sufficient knowledge in the packaging and the fulfillment side. We knew that was coming, and so we took a chance and we hired someone who had that background and that knowledge, who helped us, who came in and in very short order got us to a point where we could start handling. She came in and she rearranged our whole fulfillment line and our whole system there. We also approached our vendors. We created a great relationship with FedEx, gave us a technology grant to help us with the shipping and the packaging side of it. They came in and redid all of our packaging and helped us get to standard and up to speed on that. And so, you know, we knew enough of what we didn't know to get to bring on some people that had the right skill set to help us get through it.
Now, I don't know if a lot of people realize that FedEx and other vendors do that. So did they approach you, or did you realize that they could help you with that and reach out to them?
No, we had no idea. If it hadn't been for our FedEx rep, who also saw, you know, we did make a point to point out to all of our vendors what was coming, because we had to leverage, because this was right in the middle of the financial collapse, you remember. And so credit and everything else was very, very slim, if not at all. Mm-hmm. And we were running on cash flow. So we went to all of our vendors and said, hey, this is what's happening. We need your help to make this happen. And I think because everybody else was in the same boat as us, I mean, they, you know, they needed the business. So many of our vendors gave us a break, even carried us through that that period. And we said that to FedEx. We said, you know, we need your help. This is what's happening. And our FedEx rep was good enough and you know, aggressive enough to say, hey, let us be your partner, your main partner. We'll come in, we'll give you the computers, we'll give you a grant to help you figure out the technology side of this, how to sync up all these different vendors in one system, you know, we had to get certified to ship live animals, which was very uncommon, it's a very random thing. And so we had a box person come in and they configured everything. They figured out how to do it. We, you know, drop tested stuff. We got the right equipment and they gave us a grant for all this. And so it was a heads up for our FedEx rep.
Well, the great tip for listeners, and that is, you know, ask your vendors what more they can do for you, and say, what if our business was to expand by 5 to 10-fold quickly? Well, how can you help us achieve that? That's a great tip.
Right.
Now, when you started this, it sounded like you started the business with the exit in mind. Now, what did that look like, and what was your thinking along those lines?
Well, first and foremost, we wanted to build, before we made our exit, we wanted to build a company that we could be proud of, that could be a legacy company, that could have and be a player in the toy space. Our exit strategy really was that was our first priority. You know, we're relatively young, and so that was our main priority. Our exit strategy was to either go public or sell the company to a larger player in the industry that could capitalize it even more and could
strategic buyer, yeah, strategic.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, and that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you started with that end in mind, and that was your vision up front, was we're going to build this to sell it, right?
No, you know, we didn't start with that. We started with the idea that we wanted to build a legacy company, a company that could be proud of. And you know, obviously, we also knew that we would reach a point where we would be beyond, if we wanted to grow and continue growth and do the kind of products that we wanted to do. You know, products are expensive, and it's an expensive business model when you're talking about a business like the toy business. Not every product, you know, sometimes you put in $50,000 to $100,000 into a product and it doesn't sell. And so it's a rather risky business. It's a very expensive business. And so we knew that going in. We knew the model was tough. But we wanted to build a company that we could be proud of. And then at some point we knew we'd have to find a strategic partner to come in and really capitalize it the way it needed to be capitalized.
I see. Okay. So first, start with the values that you built into the company and build that in, right? Bake that into the company that no matter what happens, we want to be proud of whatever this company's doing, of course, and the effort, and have our values realized. And then at some point, we're going to need to sell a portion or all of it to capitalize it, or we'll take it public. But the point there is, I guess we're trying to get through to listeners is, but you did think about it. You did think down the road, here's where we might go with this. And how did that impact some of your decisions, or did it?
I wouldn't say it impacted our decisions on the product side very much, but certainly on the operational side. We knew that everything had to be done. You know, this was not a business that it wasn't a lifestyle business. We weren't going to be able to sort of run it very loosely. We knew we needed to have systems and processes and things in place. And for example, you know, we knew the books had to be absolutely spotless from the very start. We knew we had to be very systematic in our accounting approach. We knew we had to manage it like a big company would be managed.
I like that.
And,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we did. We were very, very clean. Our books were clean. Things were, processes were in place. And so when we did go public and we did we sold the company, you know, the audits were a breeze. They looked at everything from all the way back and said, well, you know, there's nothing to question here. And it made that aspect of going out and looking for money much, much, much easier.
You didn't have to undo anything, in other words. It was all built in right from the start.
Right. Didn't have to undo anything, didn't have to explain anything, and people were impressed that in our management of it, that they understood that we knew what we were doing, and they understood that we had been very open and honest and open about everything in it. And so it certainly made made everything much smoother when we went and asked for more money and found an investor. It gave him confidence in us, essentially.
Confidence, and that's exactly what we're after. There is confidence from the buyer that things are as they expect them to be. Rhett, we've only got a couple minutes. Time's just flying by here. I'm really enjoying our conversation. Tell me about your book, 1 Million Frogs. What's that all about?
Well, 1 Million Frogs came from our first staff meeting, and you know, we had come into this group into our employees 2 or 3 days after we had started the company. We had a few people that we had working for us, and we sat down at a table, and we were trying to take a very management consulting approach to, you know, we're trying to do a SWOT analysis up on the board, the blank stares, you know, from everybody in the room. And we finally realized that nobody in the room had ever been asked to contribute to and figure out how to build a company. And so we ended up having to boil it down to one thing and one goal, and that was, and we just wrote 1 million frogs up on the board so everybody could visualize this aquarium and selling 1 million, you know, 1 million of these things. Mm-hmm. And that's where the title of the book comes from. And it's about building a company. It's about entrepreneurship. It's about, you know, the stories and the things that we went through is really, in a lot of ways, first-time entrepreneurs building a company like this. And it was a really great sort of history of what we did. And I think for me, what the book is and what it ends up being is it's a survivor's guide for entrepreneurs. For people who've been in entrepreneurship for a while, it reiterates what you're doing and how you feel and the things that you go through. For new entrepreneurs, somebody that's thinking about entrepreneurship, I think the book is a real life case study of what entrepreneurship is like. And I don't see a lot of that out there. It gives you some really good ideas of what it's going to be like.
Yeah, it sounds like you start with the mission and vision and then share that with your employees, and then they share it with the world, and off to the races you go. And that is lacking in a lot of businesses. They hold that in too much. Sounds like a fascinating read. Is it available on Amazon? Is that where people can find it, or should they come to your website?
It will be. It will be coming out on Amazon and in book form later in the year. It is actually done and being edited and illustrated and all that stuff right now. It's not quite finished yet in that regard. But I think it's going to be an exciting read for everybody and one that will give people a little bit of an insight into entrepreneurship.
I look forward to it, and unfortunately we're out of time right now, but I want you to come back on and talk with us about the path to the sale of your company and what that was like. And then by then, maybe your book will be out and you can share some more about that, because it sounds like a fascinating read. We really want to make sure that people have a chance to learn from you and what you learned. Congratulations on your successes, and thanks for joining us today, Rhett. Is it fair to say people can come and learn more about you at your website?
They certainly can, rhettpower.com. And you can also read my weekly column on inc.com. And I publish there a couple of times a week on business and entrepreneurship and management, and love for people to follow me there as well.
Rhett Power is spelled RHETTPOWER. And go to his website, rhettpower.com, and look for Rhett at inc.com. And Rhett, we're sure happy you came on with us today. And again, like I said, I want to continue our conversation another time, but we have to run for today. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Bill.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with another guest. So please hang in there with us. We'll be back in about 40 seconds.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing over 250 top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.